This is the DPHRO and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.
Got the number one pick in the NHL draft, but the minute can't seem to stump. Do something dumb, that's an observation. CLT make him need to run.
Come
on, every trash, CMT for short. Wonder if we best once you peep the score. Up at the crack of dawn, top stories of the morning. While you're yawning, grab your coffee, rise to shine with 98.7. This is drop time. We provide highlights from your favorite teams. Got Dave and Rick making plenty of picks. It's Rule 76.
All right, on a Tuesday morning, here it is, DiPietro and Rothenberg. Pat O'Keefe once again sitting in for Dave alongside Rick on this Tuesday morning. As the swoon, whatever label you want to put on it, for the New York Yankees continues. Another nine-inning shutout performance, two in a row now for the Yankees. They haven't scored a run since Saturday night, Rick. And you know what? It seems like it's getting uglier and uglier by the day, doesn't it?
It does. But I can say this, Pat. We had a nice show yesterday, three nice hours getting to know each other. Let's be better than Aaron Hicks today, all right? That's our goal. Be better than Aaron Hicks today. That's all I'm asking.
I feel like that could be accomplished relatively quickly in the show. In the first hour, in fact, I would hope, anyway.
See, this is what I do. I set the bar nice and low, so after the first hour, we feel great. And we crushed this show, buddy. Yeah, the Yankees are struggling, man. I mean, you mentioned back-to-back shutouts. That's the fourth time they've been shut out in their last nine games. Last night it was Aaron Hicks. Gerrit Cole pitched well. I mean, Aaron Hicks got twisted around three different times. Then he grounds into the double play with the bases loaded. I mean, he's struggling. He's got last 16 games, he's 5-for-53. So, I mean, anyone questioning, you know, why would Brian Cashman trade Jordan Montgomery for Harrison Bader? Well, so you don't have to see Aaron Hicks anymore. That's why you do it. And I get it. He's not, you know, he's currently dealing with the plantar fasciitis, so he's not playing right now. But again, it was one of those nights where it's the Yankees are having a hard time syncing it all up. Like, Gerrit Cole pitched good enough to win. Offensively, they did nothing. You had the Rizzo play. You had, you know, Trevino trying to sack bunt, which didn't work. But offensively, they had nothing. And then, you know, then the bullpen. It's funny because I get a chance to watch this series with my in-laws are in town. And my father-in-law is a huge Rays fan. So I get the commentary from the Rays side as I'm watching the game. And it was funny. So they have the 1-0 lead. And, you know, having watched, you know, every single one of these Yankees games, he's like, oh, we need another run. We need some insurance. I'm like, no, you don't. I'm telling you, you're good. You do not, you won't need insurance. You're fine. And they finally ended up getting it. And it was Siri that did it. And his reaction after he gets that base hit, he's like, oh, that's embarrassing. You should never let that guy get a hit. He stinks. The Yankees, they can't do anything right. So, yeah, man. I mean, this is, again, we can keep selling it as this is the right time to struggle, because again, Toronto's equally as bad. So you're not losing ground on Toronto. You're going to win the division, and you're just trying to get, you know, everyone healthy and back before the postseason. But I mean, this is becoming a larger and larger sample size, right? Like, this is not, you know, a couple weeks where they're struggling. Yeah, we got a much larger sample size than that now. And I mean, I guess you can point to the starting pitching's has been pretty consistently good, but without Stanton in that lineup, without LeMahieu in that lineup, I mean, it's pretty much been all on Judge. And if Judge doesn't carry the team, the team's not winning.
Well, there's a couple things here. Number one, yeah, they still have that 10-game lead. Tampa Bay last night with their win moves into a tie for second with Toronto. So now both of those teams are 10 games behind the Yankees. And that's who the Yankees are playing this week. They got two more against the Rays and then a 4-game series at the stadium against the Blue Jays. But at some point, Rick, this is going to become more than just, okay, well, this is the time of the year you want to struggle. At some point, you have to show some sort of an indication that you're going to be a team that can win in the playoffs, because this division, and this is the first time I think I've actually been here, now that Tampa's the team behind them, because Toronto struggled almost as much as the Yankees. I mean, they've missed a golden opportunity here. But Tampa's always tough, and they're always feisty, as your father-in-law will probably tell you. And Tampa's a team that's not going to go away, and they always play the Yankees extremely tough. So now that they're the team that is directly behind the Yankees, I mean, and you're right, the Yankees lineup is Aaron Judge, and that's it. Like, last night, it's still 1-0 in the bottom of the eighth, and Gleyber Torres, who they put in the leadoff spot last night to try to get him going, and it seemed to work. He got a couple of hits. He leads off the eighth inning with a single. So, okay, the tying run's on base. It's a 1-0 game, and Aaron Judge is up. And Judge hits a sharp ground ball up the middle, and that shortstop for Tampa's got a really nice glove. Walls made a nice stab and ended up turning it into a double play. And as soon as that double play was turned, the game was over. Like, you knew the game was over because Judge was your last chance in that Yankees lineup to get something done. And it has been like that for far too long right now. And to your point, who knew that Harrison Bader would end up being the second most important player on this Yankees team? He can't get back from that injury soon enough, based on what we're seeing from Aaron Hicks.
Well, that was the worst thing that happened to Aaron Hicks, was them trading Joey Gallo. Because now, I mean, we took some phone calls on Cashman yesterday, but it's glaring, right? Like, I mean, he's another one of those players, and I get that Brian Cashman, one of his goals was to, you know, to build a team that can you know, obviously win during the regular season, to get you to the postseason, but that's better equipped to win in the postseason, right? Like, you got a lot more IKF brought in for his defense, bat the ball kind of guy. Benintendi, same kind of deal. Trevino behind the plate defensively. That's like, all right, let's focus on better defense. Let's run the bases better, which they were awful at last season. And, you know, let's have a lineup that's not so much swing and miss. And when they're going well and when they were whole, I mean, they were awesome. I mean, they got off to a 52-18 start. Like, they were great. They were the best team in baseball. And they're still, defensive run saves, the best team in baseball. But, I mean, right now, without a couple of their big bats, you're right. Like, as soon as Judge grounded into that double play, the game was over. It was. Like, this is just, there are guys, you know, throughout that lineup right now, there's too many holes. Guys are struggling. And on top of that, you're seeing too many, RJ was texting us last night in the group chat, just non-competitive at bats. I mean, in the seventh, you had Trevino and Kiner Falefa, who had absolutely zero chance against Thompson. Like, just overmatched, overwhelmed. There was no hope for them. And that's like, to be honest with you, Pat, I was actually surprised that when IKF got that single before Hicks grounds into the Nubs went into the ending double play, because it was Hicks coming up, I was surprised. And I know Arozarena's got a great arm, but he was kind of off balance, that they didn't take a chance and push the envelope a little bit and try to send him, just because they've been having such a hard time scoring runs.
Hicks now has grounded into a double play with the bases loaded 4 times this season, and that's the most in Major League Baseball. And he's become the face of this thing, but he's by no means the only one in the lineup that is not playing up to par. You know, you go up and down. Benintendi was traded for. He got to New York as a 320 hitter, and his average is down to 302. You know, Miguel Andujar, I've always been a proponent of him. I say put him in the lineup every day, he gets a hit. He does get a hit every day, but every day it's a 1-for-4 with not a lot of power, so he hasn't added a lot. You know, Josh Donaldson, all right, every time you talk about Josh Donaldson, the first thing you say is what? Well, his defense has been really good. And why is that the first thing we say every time? Because he's a 222 hitter with a 386 slugging percentage. Rizzo had a really tough night. I mean, Rizzo and the hit by pitch last night, which I thought was ridiculous. I'm not really sure where he was supposed to go when he gets hit by the
Stop
pitch.
Stop it.
Really?
Yeah, heard it after the game. Stop it. He knew exactly what he was doing. There was 2 strikes, and what he said, he was pissed, and he didn't think it should, because his track record says that he gets hit by a lot of pitches because he crowds the plate.
He does crowd the plate.
Okay, but he said it after the game. He said, do you know how pissed I would have been if that ball comes back across the plate for a strike? So he was going to make sure that ball had no chance to get back across the plate.
I hear you, but listen, they have let that slide before. And that was, when that happened, though, you figured that was his only chance of getting on base. You know, once they call him back into the batter's box, you know he's going to make an out. He ended up striking out. He ended up striking out three times last night. I mean, that's where we are with this team. This is your cleanup hitter who's got like 20-something home runs, and you're hoping that he goes up and gets hit by a pitch. It's like Rudy Stein in the Bad News Bears. Just go into the batter's box and get hit by a pitch, because, again, outside of Aaron Judge, that is your best chance at a base runner right now.
Yeah, no, if that's, but I mean, I guess that's, I mean, that's really the biggest problem. I mean, if that's what we're focused on, was Anthony Rizzo being hit by a pitch, which would have made it first and second with one out, as you know, as one of the reasons why the Yankees didn't score a run or give themselves a chance to win this game, then, I mean, that's
a rally.
Yeah, but that's a bigger problem, though, man.
That's the problem.
One of the best teams in baseball.
It was. Not the way they're playing right now. Not what we're looking at right now.
Gerrit Cole, in his last 13 innings pitched, which is his last couple starts, has given up one earned run and has had zero run support. Zero runs. Not one run.
We were texting last night, at least Cole is pitching well. And again, with the Yankees these days, every time you, at least I, say a sentence about them, it always has the qualifier, well, at least this, you're searching for positives. And Cole is a positive, because his three starts off the All-Star break were not good. His third start was a disaster when he gave up the six runs in the first inning to Seattle. But his last two starts, where he has pitched extremely well but got no run support, that's at least a good sign. He seems to be back on track, and this is a tough Tampa Bay lineup he faced yesterday. But Cole's playing well. Judge is playing well. I mean, there's 26 guys on the team, Rick. Who else is playing well?
Well, that I think speaks to the bigger problem right now, which is, like, as one of the best teams in baseball, and the reason why they were one of the best teams in baseball, and I know, I mean, everything was clicking, starting pitching was great, bullpen was, you know, locked down, Clay Holmes was an all-star, like, you name it, Aaron Judge, you know, lineup, everyone was finding a way to contribute, but, like, most of these teams, most of these better teams in baseball, they have a couple guys in their lineup that are good enough at points during the season to carry the team if everyone else is struggling. Like, I mean, Judge has been consistently good the entire season, but he can't always do it on his own. Like, he needs somebody to lean on in that lineup. Like, guys will chip in and, you know, have good nights, but consistently you need a couple guys in that lineup that you can count on to carry you. And I think Stanton is one of those guys. Like, with the Mets, you have, like, the reason why the Mets have been so good outside of, well, obviously great starting pitching and everything else, is because, like we mentioned yesterday, Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor play every single day. And those two, when they're, I mean, they're capable of carrying a lineup. Well, even when everyone else is struggling, like, Pete can carry a lineup, Lindor can carry a lineup, it's only Judge. So if you don't have anyone else in that lineup to lean on, like, yeah, I'm just sitting here and you said that, and that was my first thought when it happened. And that's why I was like, my father-in-law was like, oh, we needed some insurance. Like, when Judge hit into that double play, you're right, I felt like, no, you don't really. One run will be enough, because this, like, once we get past that part of the Yankees lineup, unless Rizzo, you know, when he didn't have a good night last night, unless he runs into one, like, you're fine. Because, I mean, there's not much else. And that's the thing, though, too, right? Like, when you have, like, everyone expected DJ LeMahieu, once he had, you know, he dealt with injury last year, but he would come back, and he's been good. And now the toe, he kind of has derailed him a little bit, and that's why he's not currently playing. But, like, you made a conscious effort to be better defensively and sacrifice some of your offense, right? You did that at short, you did that at third, you did that behind the plate, like, with the thought that you're going to have LeMahieu playing the way LeMahieu can play and Stanton playing the way that he can play,
and
that would be enough. And Torres, too, and that would be enough. And you know what? That was the case. But, like, I'm just sitting here looking at that lineup. Without LeMahieu and Stanton in that lineup, that is not that's not a scary lineup.
No.
It's not.
Especially with Rizzo hitting .221. And I know batting average isn't what it used to be, but it's still an indicator. Rizzo .221. Torres snapped an 0-for-21 streak yesterday. He's at .247. Donaldson, again, defense has been really good. He's at .222. All right, this is the team that was on 117-win pace right around the All-Star break. Since the All-Star break, they're now 8-16. So they're on a 54-win pace since the All-Star break over their last 24 games. Here's Boone after the game last night. Where has this Yankee team swagger gone?
I think there's a few individuals that are probably wearing it, you know, right now with how we've struggled in some particular games over this last week or 10 days. Big picture, you know, going back even over the last month, the offense has been there. We've had those like 4 out of 9 where it's been a struggle for us. And I think there are some individuals that are wearing that and kind of fighting through it and trying to find it. And it gets hard. That's part of it. You got to find a way when it gets hard. You got to be able to dig yourself out. It's good to see Glaber have, you know, 2 more really good at bats at the top of the order tonight after hitting a few balls on the nose in Boston. Hopefully that's something that kind of gets him on track, but we got to get more of that going.
How about this from Boone? And you mentioned Alonso in the lineup every day. Lindor wants to be in the lineup every day. That hasn't been the case all season long for the Yankees. And in the first half, it worked out really well when they had a comfortable lead, when everybody they seemed to plug in did their job and led to winning. But now that's no longer the case. So the question was asked of Boone last night, is there currently a lack of urgency?
You had been saying at the beginning of the year, we're making deposits now, we might have to take withdrawals later. Do you worry, though, there's not a sense of urgency because we're good, we've got this 10.5 game lead?
No. That's why I never, whatever point of the season, at the highest point of our season when things are going well, it's like, it's great and all. We understand we got a long way to go and there's bumps that are coming. And so, no, unfortunately, I think the season we've had so far where you race out to this big lead and are on this historic pace in the first half, we've hit a rough patch. We haven't played our best baseball. So that can turn into people's heads, whatever they are, narratives of I don't think it's that other than we just haven't played our best. We've missed a couple of key figures in there, but we got to find ways to win games. But no, I've never felt that with this group. You know, we're just going through a tough time right now that we got to fight through. And I feel like we're doing that and we'll do that.
Yeah, but that's the thing, though, Pat. I mean, you got to like the Mets went through this where they played, you know, they for a bunch of different reasons, they started to sputter a little bit, and they played, you know, right around, I think they were game over 500, and then they figured it out, and they turned it around. You got to make sure it stays just a bump, and right now this is trending to, especially when you heard Stanton yesterday about his Achilles, it's trending towards more than a bump, because, and this is any sport, this goes for any sport. We'll talk about this with, you know, with the Jets and the Giants. We'll talk about this with the Rangers and the Islanders. Like, what separates good teams from great teams or average teams is finding ways to win those close games as opposed to finding ways to lose those close games. And right now the Yankees are finding ways to lose these close games, which wasn't the case early on in the season. And, I mean, 8 runs in 6 games, that's not going to get the job done. And you've lost 10 of your last 12. So, yeah, you can say it's a bump, but it's starting to become a little bit more than a bump.
Early in the season, the Yankees made a living on winning these close games. Anytime it was close, as it got late, you just had confidence that they were going to pull it out because they did night after night after night. And I said this yesterday. It's the exact opposite right now. You have no confidence. 1-0 last night as you're moving on and you're watching those non-competitive at-bats, to quote RJ. You just don't have any confidence that they're even going to break through with 1 run, let alone win a game.
Well, and here's the other thing, though, too. So, yeah, you're right. And I was saying the same thing, is that this game is over. But still, like, at least get to the bottom of the ninth only down a run, knowing right now that you're struggling, and that's, again, your elite bullpen. So it's always something. It doesn't seem during this slide that it's synced up, because then now Peralta with a couple walks and Trevino comes in, and before you know it, now you're in the bottom of the ninth. It's 4-0. There's no chance. The Yankees on the bench don't think they have a chance. At least down one, you're like, okay, you know, someone could do something special here and get us tied up.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the DPetro and Rothenberg podcast.
And welcome aboard.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts. This is DPetro and Rothenberg.
Peralta hits one deep to center. Every which way but loose, and it gets past Hicks. He
turned three different ways.
First off, I turned the wrong way, then tried to recover. That was a run that Garrett shouldn't have had to deal with.
And obviously misjudged it, play that's got to be made, but just got it struggling right now.
For anyone that was outraged that they traded Jordan Montgomery for Harrison Bader, I think you have a pretty good idea of why that was something that Brian Cashman wanted to address.
Pietro and Rothenberg.
Can I ask you a quick question about Hicks before you hang up?
He stinks.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Short and sweet there by Rick DiPietro. Summing it up in two words. Pat O'Keefe in for Dave on this Tuesday morning. DiPietro and Rothenberg, 98.7 ESPN New York. 1-800-919-3776.
Do you realize how much it pains me to have to say that?
Yeah, it's not fun.
It's my least favorite thing to do. About this job.
I agree.
Is to have to say that players stink.
It's got to be tough as a former player. I mean, you know, it's...
Because we're trying, man. We're trying. Yeah. Everyone's trying. And in the reality of a lot of these guys, I can't speak for every single one of them because, you know, everyone's a little bit different. But for the most part, like, professional athletes are much harder on themselves and critical of themselves than any fan or media will ever be. And then that's why, like you hear some of the stuff about Joey Gallo, like that guy was, like, he wasn't leaving his apartment. Like, he was, like, and you could see it, like, during games, just, like, you could tell he was a mental, like, he was a mess. Like, he didn't know how, it's something you've done your entire life and have been great at to a point where you're getting paid millions of dollars to be a professional athlete. And then there are moments when you're struggling where it's like you forgot how to play. It's like... Like, I remember times in my, like, sitting in my stall midway through a game, like, after a second period, and being awful, and thinking to myself, I don't know how I'm going to make a save. Like, it's like, I'm trying. I want to. It's just, like, I can't, like, I stink right now, and I just have no idea, like, no matter how many shots I take in practice, how mentally prepared I get on the ice, and for some reason, all that goes away, and I stink. And how am I ever going to get it back? And eventually... You know, it clicks back and you get it back and, you know, you feel like yourself again. But, I mean, for Aaron Hicks to be in the spot he's in where, like, the least you could do. Like, I mean, five hits in your last 53 at-bats. Like, that wears on you. You're wearing that. And then for that to all of a sudden now translate to what was a horrendous, horrendous play in center field. Like, whew. Like, he must be in a spot right now where, like, his head's spinning. Like, he's probably saying to himself, like, I don't know where I go from here because it's just getting worse and worse.
Well, that was the look he had on his face after he hit into the double play with the bases loaded and one out. And he's standing there, and the first base coach didn't even want to make eye contact with him. He looked like if he could dig a hole in the middle of the infield and crawl into it. I mean, you are standing there. The boos are raining down on you, 40,000 people, and you've now struck out. You've misplayed a fly ball out that Michael Kay repeatedly said on the broadcast last night had a 95% out probability. And then that, and which has become, unfortunately, his forte, grounding into double plays with less than two outs. That's the ultimate rally killer. If he could dig a hole and just go away at that moment, I think he would have.
I'm sure he would if he could just pass the baton and be like, hey, this is just as long as I don't hit into a double play and the guy behind me can try to do some damage, that would be great because I don't trust myself. The psychology of sportsmen, it fascinates me how you can be in a moment where everything you see you can hit or save or our team's never going to lose to the polar opposite where you seriously question if you'll ever like get a hit or win a game again. It fascinates me because it's such a crazy feeling because you'll actually verbalize it sometimes. Like, you'll be in the locker room and you'll look around and things will be going great. And you're like, God, we're going to win this game. And you feel like you're like, this is before the game starts. And you just, for some reason, like, there's this level of certainty and confidence that just is pouring out of you. And you're like, and everyone kind of feels it at the same time. And everyone feeds off it. And you go out there and you can't lose. Like, someone's going to find a way to make sure that you win. And then you'll go through a stretch of time where it's like, you look around and it's like, I think we're all thinking the same thing, that there's no chance we're going to win this game. Like, we're that bad right now. And right now the Yankees are in the midst of that.
That's exactly where they are right now. Rick, let's get into some Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Big day for the Jets and a big day for their young second-year quarterback, Zach Wilson, goes in for arthroscopic knee surgery in Los Angeles. Now, as we heard Robert Saleh say yesterday, not out of the woods yet, just in terms of the 2 to 4 week time frame. They'll know more definitively once they go in and take a look at the knee, just the extent of the damage that was done, the injury on Friday night in the preseason opener. As far as Zach's standing on the team, well, Joe Flacco is now the starting quarterback, the veteran from the Baltimore Ravens, presumably in line to start at least the season opener, and we'll see from there. What you're hearing out of Jets camp, Rick, apparently Flacco's a pretty popular guy these days.
Well, you heard it from Robert Saleh. I mean, as far as Robert Saleh is concerned, they have three starting quarterbacks, which is definitely not the case. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's really no other choice, is there? Right? I mean, you see your second overall pick go down. Who knows how long he's going to be out. And next up is Joe Flacco, and every single guy in that locker room isn't going through all this work and the off-season programs and everything else to lose football games. So Joe Flacco it is. And I've heard people calling in yesterday, and this is something that we talked about as far as, you know, how does it look for Zach Wilson if Joe Flacco in this moment gives you just as good a chance, maybe better chance to win than Zach Wilson? You got to understand, man, there's something to be said about experience and being a veteran and how Joe Flacco's game translates to the offense that is being run. Because, I mean, it happens in every sport. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you could have a kid that was drafted first overall, second overall, but he's still a kid, and then put in a moment, like, yeah, may not give you the better chance to win when you have a former Super Bowl winner that's played in the league for as long as Joe Flacco's played in the league. Like, there's nothing he hasn't seen. Like, the game is slow for him now. I think Zach Wilson's still in the process of trying to slow things down for himself. Like, that's not a problem for Joe Flacco. Like, you worry more about Joe Flacco for an extended period of time. But to jump in for a couple weeks and give you a good chance to be competitive and hopefully win these games, I don't think that's a slight to what Zach Wilson's going to eventually be, hopefully.
I still can't get over what you said about Robert Saleh and the Jets having three starting caliber quarterbacks. I mean, imagine their good fortune right now heading into the new season. Let's hear what Saleh had to say in that regard.
You know, I said it way back, I think either OTAs or earlier in training camp, that we feel like we have three starting quarterbacks. And Mike has gone out and proven that he can beat a really good defense. He threw for over 400 yards. He's even in that Thursday night game a couple days later, he threw a shot to Elijah Moore to tie the game up. He had to leave with the injury. So we got all the faith in the world in Mike White, got all the faith in the world in Joe Flacco, and then you got Strebler showing that he can ball too. So really like our quarterback room.
So I didn't even realize that the three starting caliber quarterbacks apparently don't even include Zach Wilson, according to that.
No, we have tons of depth, Pat. I don't know if you realize that or not.
Now, Bill Parcells said if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. But what happens if you have three quarterbacks? Then how many do you have? What's
well,
the equation
now,
there?
Oh, now it's, I mean, you don't know what to do with yourself. It's just, it's too much to handle.
Just an embarrassment of riches.
Yes.
Apparently, though, the Jets very happy with their quarterback situation right now. Garrett Wilson, obviously their stud rookie wide receiver, was asked about the difference between Zach Wilson and Joe Flacco.
There's definitely a difference, you know. It's a lot of experience right there with Flacco. And, you know, I feel like everything with him is to take some pace off and put pace on the balls. You know, he kind of does a good job of making the passes, you know, receiver friendly. That's the best way I can put it into words. You know, it's pretty easy to catch. Take some off the ball when you're running a slant route versus, you know, out route or put some zip on it because it got to be, you know, things like that.
So I'm just wondering if you think the Jets are being a little too effusive in their praise of Joe Flacco in light of the fact that Zach Wilson, their franchise quarterback, is on the shelf for the time being.
I think Garrett Wilson is telling you how Garrett Wilson feels. Like, I don't think there was any filter. He was asked the question, and that's, I mean, so far throughout camp, that's what he's seen, is that, you know, Joe Flacco, for a bunch of different reasons, experience being, you know, number one on that list. It's just, like, he's been there, he's done that. Like, he knows how to layer a football, when to put some extra on, when to take some off. I mean, that's his job, right? Is to make to make the football as easy to catch as humanly possible for his receivers, and those are things that you learn, you know, during the course of time and your experience. Like, and I keep saying this to you, man. It just, like, for Zach Wilson, it feels like when I watch him play, when I watched him play last year, and I know, you know, when he came back from the injury, things started to get a little bit better, but it's like he's just like he's full go. You saw it when he got hurt. Like, there's no, like, he's always going to try to make a play. He's going to zip it in there. Like, that was one of the biggest criticisms of him last year, was like the easy throws that he just wasn't making, right? Like, it just, they were inaccurate. It was either too high, it was too hard. Like, he couldn't make the easy play. It always felt like he was, you know, he was trying to do too much. And Joe Flacco has no need to try to do too much. Joe Flacco was, I mean, he's already established himself. Like, that's part of being a rookie, too. You're trying to establish yourself. Like, you want to prove to everybody that there's a reason why I'm here. I want to establish myself as the franchise quarterback. I was the second overall pick. And I think Zach Wilson's still kind of in the process of doing that, where Joe Flacco's like, listen, I've won a Super Bowl, man. Like, I don't need to come out here and try to impress anybody. I'm going to come out, do what I do. I'm going to run the offense. And whatever happens, happens. I will say this, though. I didn't love what Garrett Wilson said, and I'll tell you why. Because I'll never forget, we were doing the show, and the Kansas City Chiefs were a playoff team, and Alex Smith was their quarterback. And remember, Andy Reid had traded up for Patrick Mahomes.
Yep.
And you were hearing, like, I was doing the show with Canty, and Canty was getting phone calls, and we were hearing that, like, Alex Smith is good, but you should see this kid, Patrick Mahomes. Like, there was some thought. Like, they went through a little bit of a skid. They were like, get Patrick Mahomes in. Like, he's that good. Like, he's showing out that much in practice that everyone, like, you can't ignore that he's the better quarterback. Like, same kind of conversation with Justin Herbert in L.A. with the Chargers. Like, the guys know when they know. So, like, you always want to hear, you know, guys have, you know, really high, you know, really, really nice things to say, or like, Eric, wow, this guy, you should see this kid throw football. Like, this kid can play. So I didn't necessarily love what Garrett Wilson said, but I get it. But I think, I mean, the reality where the Jets are at is, and I know Ira called yesterday, he was talking about, if Joe Flacco wins a couple games, you got to keep him in for credibility with the coaching staff. And part of me agrees with that, but like, Zach Wilson has to be your future. And Zach Wilson's going to be your quarterback. So when Zach Wilson is back, we all as Jets fans have to hope like hell, as much as we want to win football games, that it's Zach Wilson is the quarterback that's winning us football games. Otherwise, we're going to be in a tough spot again.
You can't go through this season without having a strong feeling on who Zach Wilson is.
Yeah.
First of all, I think that the likelihood, you know, and God bless Ira. He's a great fan, but you know, he's got the Jets 5-4, maybe 4-5 with Flacco. Their schedule's too tough, and this is a team that won four games last year. I don't see either of those scenarios coming to fruition. If they do, that's fantastic. But I don't even see that being a possibility right now. But even if that is the case, you can't punt on this season from the Zach. You need to understand who Zach Wilson is by the end of the season, because look what the Giants are dealing with right now. They used almost as high a pick on Daniel Jones in 2019, and he is just like that. It feels like he just got here, right? He just played that Tampa Bay game, his first start when he replaced Eli Manning. That was 4 years ago. Now he's on the last year of his contract. If you don't get Zach his reps and get him out there this season, and he's now 2 years into his career, the clock is ticking on that rookie contract. And you said it yesterday. You just did this with Darnold, third overall pick that you traded up for. Now you're doing it with Zach Wilson. At some point, you've got to land on a guy. And more importantly, Rick, at some point, you got to be right about the guy that you land on. And that's the concerning thing for me as well. There are no indications from what I have seen or from what you hear within Jets camp that it is abundantly clear that this is the right guy.
Yeah, see, that's I guess that was what I was trying to say, and maybe I didn't say it the right way, but that for me is a bigger problem. Like, even I heard, I think Ira called, did Ira tell us yesterday that, but he's just watching Zach Wilson in practice?
Yes, he says that.
He goes to every practice. He seems like he's Like, he looks like a first-year player still. Like that, yeah, that bothers me a little bit. Because you expect, I mean, I did, maybe it's not the right thing to do, but I think any NFL football fan now, knowing the sense of urgency with a rookie contract for your quarterback, feels like if you're going to spend that high a pick on your quarterback from year one to year two should be a big jump, and it should be a noticeable jump. And, you know, so far people you talk to haven't really seen that during the course of training camp, and then you watch him play in the first couple series, he throws the you know, egregious interception and then blows his knee, is that now, right, you're going to start the season where he's going to have surgery today. Hopefully it's, you know, everything is just a cleanup, and he's back on the lower end of that timetable. But you want this kid to be set up to have the most success possible, and having to rehab a knee injury and then jump into, I don't care what week it is, the beginning of the schedule, like, where's the soft landing spot when he comes back? Like, tell me, because I mean, look at the schedule to start the season. Like, you'd like to have a, like, you hear how many guys will tell you, like, yeah, you know, miss training camp and then try to jump right into a season. It takes a while to get your bearings. So, okay, we saw two series from him, and now he's going to rehab a knee injury, same knee here at last year, and come back and then be thrust into these high expectations against, I don't know, at Cleveland, the Bengals, at the Steelers, the Dolphins, Packers, Broncos. I mean, it's a tough start to the season, even if you had a full training camp and preseason games.
But he has to be, because
he's got no choice.
You can't lose. They have no choice. You can't lose this season. 1-800-919-3776. Talking Zach Wilson and his surgery later today in Los Angeles. Keyshawn Johnson on KJM. Not exactly sold on the second year Jets quarterback.
I didn't see the number two pick. What I saw, it did not warrant the number two pick of the draft, especially when you had all those other quarterbacks. The right. Jets got it wrong.
Well, so far they've gotten it
they
wrong.
They got it wrong. They got it wrong. My eyes telling me that when I look at Mac Jones' college film, Justin Fields' college film, Zach Wilson's college film doesn't stand with theirs.
Yeah.
It has no legs to stand on.
Yeah, but how about Trey Lance? I mean, Trey Lance barely had any college film.
But you're hearing great things about him right now.
No, I understand that. But, I mean, that's, again, I mean, you want to talk about, you know, players on that team thinking an average quarterback that's a veteran gives him a better chance to win and probably throws a much easier ball to catch. I mean, they would say the same thing that, you know, Garrett Wilson said about Joe Flacco about Jimmy Garoppolo, right? But, again, you're going for, like, you know what Jimmy Garoppolo's ceiling is, and, like, you're betting on what Trey Lance's ceiling can be. Like that's the difference. Like, we know what Joe Flacco is and what his ceiling is. Like, we haven't seen, or hopefully, knock on wood, haven't seen what Zach Wilson's, you know, what his ceiling is or potentially could be. And listen, the other thing with Keyshawn, too, is, like, Keyshawn was also the one that was pounding the table to keep Sam Darnold because Sam was a USC guy.
Well, there you go, yeah.
So I think, I mean, his opinion is a little bit skewed because of that.
Well, the ship has sailed on.
Like, let's not pretend like Justin Fields stepped in and looked good last year. Because he didn't. I mean, hell, Trevor Lawrence didn't look good.
Nobody
last year.
Nobody looked good last year. Mac Jones, but he was on it. The best team.
And then Davis Mills in Houston looked pretty good.
He looked pretty good, too. He did.
Thanks for listening to the DPetro and Rothenberg podcast.
I'll give it to you whenever you want it.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN. To cuddle.
I would be a menace as a teenage girl.
To marry.
I don't want to give up the meat.
Or to trash.
I think I'm emotionally broken.
That is the question.
Ah, yes. And it's all brought to you by Jack Pocket. So, Pat, welcome to our little game here on
Tuesday.
Thank you. So, we begin, started the show this way with the Yankees. Not much going right. 8 runs or last 59 innings. Shut out once again, 2 nights in a row. But, and this pains me to ask you this, and Rick, we'll start with you. Which element of the Yankees in Cuddle Mary Trash concerns you the most? Their hitting, their starting pitching, or their relief pitching?
Currently, in this moment?
This exact moment.
All right. So, in this exact moment, I mean, hell, if you put Santiago in this lineup, he'd probably be batting, you know, fifth or sixth. We've all seen him swing
He's
going to
homer on
bat.
Saturday.
He better. I've staked my reputation on his abilities.
What's on the line with Dave in that wager again?
I think it's 100.
Wow.
That Ray Homers?
That Ray Homers, yeah.
Wow.
Ray hasn't made contact with the softball in a couple of years, so this is putting a lot of faith into Ray's preparation.
I'm pulling for you, Ray.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for everyone that's rooting for Ray to hit a home run. I'm going to marry the offense, RJ. I will cuddle the bullpen. And I will discard of the starting rotation.
All right. Pat?
I am going to cuddle the bullpen. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put the hitting in the trash.
Wow.
And I'm going to marry the starting rotation.
Interesting. That concerns you the most right now is the rotation.
For a playoff series, yes.
No, we're not. Answer the question for now, not a playoff series, you animal.
He's looking ahead.
I'm always looking ahead.
He just pulled a Dave. Dave, this does not include the trade deadline. Can it include the trade deadline?
So the next step for you, Pat, would then be to rip the question, which, listen, they're not always great questions.
Well, no, you know what I'll do next time, full disclosure? I'll actually listen to the question and write it down correctly.
Oh, so, well, you are in Dave's path then. All you have to do is rip the question and then threaten to quit.
And then quit CMT, yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, troubling with him. When he left on Friday, I reaffirmed. I just said, okay, well, you know, you're back whatever day he's back. And I said, I guess I will talk to you then.
Uh-oh.
Just to see if, you know, because last time he went on vacation, I said, oh, maybe we'll talk while you're gone. And he said, why?
Why?
So I said, okay, we'll talk when you're back. And he said, sounds good.
Call, don't call. We don't really care.
He's like the Derek Jeter. What we found out about Derek Jeter is that Derek Jeter goes home, doesn't watch baseball, couldn't care less. And me and you are like trying to keep in touch, how's things going, listening to the show. He has no interest.
Yeah, Rick will be off, and he'll call the inside line here just, how are things going, how can I help, and, you know, trying to consume everyone.
Dave hasn't checked in yet this week?
Dave's very open about the fact that he won't check in. He does not consume the show. He does not consume...
You never want to hang out!
He doesn't listen to the podcast and really could care less about what's happening. Troubling. So... the Fantasy Football Marathon across this lovely ESPN platform, off and rolling right now. Rick is back in the fantasy football realm, and it's already concerning him.
You see who I play in week one already?
Who's that?
Dave Rothenberg.
Dave, he have 1.5 championships.
Give me my little cookie.
Who ties in championships?
Joke. No, because it's his buddy that runs the league. It's a joke.
Yeah, inside job.
Thank you for being a friend.
So, Pat, we'll start with you this time. Cuddle, marry, trash. If you had the top pick, who would that be? Would it be Jonathan Taylor? Would it be Christian McCaffrey? Or would it be Cooper Kupp?
Oh, good question, RJ. Look at you.
That's
coming to play.
I am going to cuddle Christian McCaffrey.
Ooh.
I'm going to stick Cooper Kupp in the trash.
Wow. Triple crown.
And I will marry Jonathan Taylor.
Is there a receiver that RJ could have put in that spot?
No. Kupp would have been the guy. It's a philosophical thing with me, and I haven't won a fantasy football league in at least a decade. But you know what? I'm going to stick to my philosophy.
Yeah, I respect that.
It seems to be paying off. All right, so
an ATM.
Yes, I am going to marry Jonathan Taylor.
You're the best kind of person to invite to leagues.
That's what their expectation for me is that I'm just going to put no work into this at all.
No, they would
be wrong.
Yeah, this is troubling. I would have actually preferred we go on a different route, someone that would try less.
Yeah, like Don, for example, would have been a perfect fit. I will cuddle Cooper Kupp. And I am trashing Christian McCaffrey for one reason and one reason only. Is he has been hurt the last couple
injuries.
Years, and that scares me. Yeah,
there you go.
See, Don, though, when you call him out, though, he'll know everything about everybody.
Yeah, but you don't call him out. That's the thing, though. He's got the two kids now. He hasn't shaved his face. You just let him be.
All right. So Ray actually found this, and I want to involve Ray in this. I think it'll be fun.
Is it porn?
You know, it's not, but the second part of the foundation of where this was found, it would lead you to believe that. It was found on Wallet Hub, which is...
What is that, like Tinder?
It is not related to the other hub, at least my knowledge. So Wallet Hub power ranked all 50 states to live in. They used health, education, quality of life, safety, a bunch of metrics. So the top overall state to live in, according to Wallet Hub, is Massachusetts.
Wow.
Number two is New Jersey.
Ugh.
And third is New York. Rick, you've lived in two of those states, New York and Massachusetts. Pat lives in New York. Ray lives in the other one, New Jersey. So this will be fun. So, and we'll start with Rick and then Pat. And then Ray, I want to round this out. Cuddle, marry, trash, the best state to live in. New York, New Jersey, or Massachusetts?
Good question.
Oh, no. All right, so I will marry New York.
That was the only safe answer for me.
No, not even safe. I love Boston, but I got a nice setup. There's a lot of great qualities to New York. I will cuddle Massachusetts.
And you said some really mean things about
New
Jersey.
I'm all set with New Jersey.
You really don't
like New Jersey. Like driving through New Jersey. Trashing New Jersey.
Pat?
Lifelong New Yorker, marrying it. Married a Jersey girl. Cuddle that.
Aww. Safe answer there, yep.
Yeah.
Stick Massachusetts in the trash.
All right, so I expected that to go that way. Here's where it gets fun. Raymond, you heard during the break, we won't repeat them, some really heinous things about New Jersey were said. Your thoughts?
Well, first of all, New York's overrated.
Wow.
Right in the trash.
Here we go.
Right there.
Here we go.
Coming out firing.
I don't know enough about Massachusetts, so I'm just going to halfway it and
he's
cuddle.
He's going to cuddle the place he doesn't know anything about.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Say, there
wow.
you go. And listen, New Jersey's my home, gets a bad rap. There's very, very nice places in New Jersey. You just have to know where they are. So.
The old nice personality.
Yeah, but yet you live in a palatial condo with a salt water pool. I mean, of course you'd pick New Jersey.
Yeah, true.
Where do you live again?
I live in a nice little okay. little place.
He's got that hibachi chef on staff.
There you go.
Exactly. Chef Bang Bang.
I don't have Chef Bang Bang on call at my
well,
place.
Maybe I send him over. Maybe I send Chef Bang Bang over to your condo. Just
take New York out of the trash if he does that.
Yeah, he can squirt you with some sake. All the crazy stuff you have going on there.
Firing sake. all right, so last, Pat. This for you exclusively.
No boy.
I would say that. This your first experience here on this program, and so you. But full disclosure, you've got a little bit of background with some of us here. You and Ray work a ton of Knicks and Rangers games together.
I don't like where this is going.
you and I, we haven't talked about this on the air anyway. You and I actually have known each other for a while. We went to the same college, and you and Rick now have spent time on the air texting, really a crash course, getting to know each other over the last couple of days, and talking on the air and such. So, I ask you, cuddle, marry, trash, of the three
that's
of us,
awful.
Who you enjoy working with the most?
How are you?
Do the right thing, Pat. Do the right thing.
And now you're officially part of the show.
Dave takes
Ray,
a lot of vacation.
Can I ask one qualifier question?
Yeah.
Has Ray put together the Knicks and Rangers schedule for this season yet?
That's a good question, yeah.
Because that will factor into my decision here.
Ray has a lot of power.
I think my power on these things is vastly overstated.
Cuddle, marry, trash. Ray, RJ, and Rick. We do have SUNY Brockport in common, RJ.
Oh, yeah.
I can't answer this question.
Oh, here we go.
Come on.
He can't do it. He doesn't have the stomach for it, RJ. Yep.
That's the point.
Yeah, this is very Dave. Time to quit.
Well, no, Dave, I feel like would have no problem answering this.
You don't know. Dave has lists of who he thinks the dumbest in the show is, just that is ready.
I was going to say, yeah. I think Dave would throw everybody in the trash.
He's like that.
He'd probably marry himself.
He's just getting to know himself right now on vacation.
Can I put Dave in the trash? Is that an option?
Oh, yeah. Well, we would like that.
He's not here.
That is an acceptable answer if you just want to throw Dave in the trash. So.
And I'll just have a cuddle fest with the rest of you.
All right. Safe answer.
Sounds like a Gunling vacation.
And the La Quinta bed.
Thanks for listening to the DPetro and Rothenberg podcast.
And welcome aboard.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Pat O'Keefe in for Dave on this Tuesday morning alongside Rick. I need you to help clear something up for me, Rick.
Well, what do you need?
I need to get inside the mind of a top-level athlete because Kevin Durant continues to confuse me. If you follow his Twitter account and the amount of times that he claps back at criticism. You would think that there's nobody in the world who cares more about what other people think than Kevin Durant does. Yet all of his actions regarding his career, especially this summer, requesting the trade from the Brooklyn Nets and then demanding the trade from the Brooklyn Nets and then giving this reported ultimatum that it's either him or the combination of Sean Marks and Steve Nash. If you're concerned about what people think about you, those are not actions that are consistent with having people think that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's the interesting part about Kevin Durant is, and he is very active on Twitter. And the more people you ask about that, the more that, you know, just say that he enjoys it. Like it's something, you know, that he enjoys doing. But you're right. Like even going back to when he first made the move to Golden State. So they win the two championships. He's, you know, two-time finals MVP. And then, you know, stories start to leak out how he's mad at Rich Kleiman. And, you know, this was a mistake. He didn't get the kind of credit that he thought he was, you know, he deserved, and people were looking at it like it was the easy way out and it was a soft move, which I never thought. Like, why not go play on, you know, if they want you, why not go play on, you know, a great team like that that's well run? Like, I would have done the same thing. And now to be at this point where, you know, it felt like you have a perfect situation in Golden State where, hell, I mean, who knows how many championships you could have won. And if you keep reeling off championships, at what point, and you're the best player on the team, at what point do they just say, hey, you know, forget that whole conversation about being the easy way out. This guy's, oh, you know, he's part of one of the greatest teams in the history of the NBA. And all that other nonsense starts to fade away. And he said, no, I want to go to my own spot, and I want to be the guy. I want to be the face of the team. Steph was that guy for Golden State. I want to be that guy and in Brooklyn. And I'm going to hitch my wagons to Kyrie. And we're going to make it work. Coach? No. We don't need a Kenny Atkinson? No, we don't need Kenny Atkinson. We don't even need a coach. Kyrie will coach one game. I'll coach one game. We'll make it work. And it has been a disaster of epic proportions. And I think the most confusing part for me, and I would suspect you, is you leave a perfect situation because everyone thought it was the easy way out and you didn't get the credit. So now you go to a situation where it's all on you. Whatever you want, they were going to do, and you would be judged on how it turned out. And didn't work. You won one playoff series, the whole Kyrie thing, James Harden. Like, we all know what went into it. And then the first thing that you do is have it leak out that the two teams that you want to play for are the Phoenix Suns and the Miami Heat. Like, you just got done complaining that people, you know, were criticizing you for taking the easy way out, and the two teams that you come out with initially were the best team in the West and the best team in the East were the two teams. Like, it's just it's hard to make it all make sense, what his thought process is. And then the other team is the Celtics, the team that you're the only team that got swept in the entire NBA playoffs. The only team that got swept was you by the Boston Celtics, and now the team, because you'd like to play with Marcus Smart, is the Boston Celtics?
Well, he's done that before. That's his MO. You lose to a team in the playoffs, and then you jump to that team the next year. He did that in 2016 when they lost to the Golden State Warriors when he was in Oklahoma City.
But it's inconsistent with what you're telling us that you want.
The entire thing is inconsistent. My question is, and I don't know Rich Kleiman. I've never spoken with him. I do know that for the most part, they have a strong partnership. They have a business partnership, and they've done very well together as a team. But my question is, who's advising Kevin Durant? Like, who is advising this man?
I think he's just doing it. I mean, I think Rich is part of that. But, I mean, I just think he's chasing something that I don't know if it's... Like, he's trying to take this... He's trying to you know, follow the whole LeBron James kind of playbook, right? Where, you know, LeBron James didn't feel like he was set up best in Cleveland to win a championship. Took that team as far as he could take it. Didn't trust ownership and how they were building it. So, you know, he gets together with D Wade and Chris Bosh on a team that's well run by Pat Riley in Miami, and they win the couple championships. And then, you know, decides, I'm going to go back to Cleveland. And that was I think anyone will tell you, I think you probably feel the same way, that of his four titles, the most meaningful title he gets the most credit for is the Cleveland championship.
No question.
So I think Durant thought the same thing. Okay, I win two, didn't get the credit I wanted. I'll go build my own thing. I'll win one or however many in Brooklyn or wherever it is, and I will get that same kind of payoff that LeBron got from the Cleveland one, and I'll feel satisfied, and then we can continue to just build from there. And it hasn't worked out. I just don't know why your default mechanism, like his default mechanism now would be, okay, so now I'm gonna revert back to what I did with Golden State, and I was unhappy with that decision, and yet I'm gonna now make that same decision.
By the way, I thought he should have gone back to Golden State this offseason.
Well, they have the pieces to do it.
They do.
Right?
And I think Golden State would do that. Because you know what they're concerned about in Golden State?
Winning.
They're concerned about winning championships. They would take him back if it made sense. And I think it actually would make sense. But to your point, like every decision he makes is the opposite of how he wants to be perceived. And one of the things for me it boils down to, he is not LeBron James.
No.
LeBron James was a franchise unto himself. LeBron James went to 8 consecutive NBA finals. Kevin Durant is not LeBron James.
No, and that's the thing too, though. I think that's what frustrates a lot of people now in the NBA, because I'm all about player empowerment, player movement. Like if you're a free agent and you don't like your situation, there's only a finite amount of time that we have to do this. So if you want to move on to a better place where you can trust the people in charge and you got a better chance to win, I'm all for that. And that's what LeBron's done. Like LeBron James has consistently done that. Like I'm gonna sign a short term deal. If this isn't working out the way I want to work it to work out, I'll move on. And I have that kind of leverage. But everywhere he goes, he's delivered a championship. He goes to Miami, he wins two. Comes back to Cleveland, brings a championship. Decides he wants to be in LA now as a free agent, wins a championship. Like the whole notion that these guys now are gonna start signing long term deals, and then not even a year into his new extension, decide you know what now. The whole Kyrie thing, I didn't like how that worked out. Oh, yeah, you fired, one of the assistant coaches that was my guy and didn't call me. I didn't like that, so I want out now. And I'm going to follow the whole, I'm going to ask you politely for a trade. You're going to say, yeah, we'd rather not trade you. We can't get value. Then I'm going to tell you, hey, I'm not playing here unless you get rid of Sean Marks and Steve Nash. Oh, that's not going to work? Okay, how about this? I'll retire if you don't trade me. Like, there's not many more cards you can play now at this point.
No. What else you got? And he clapped back at those reports that he was going to retire. He said on Twitter, I don't plan on retiring anytime soon, and then went on to say stuff.
Why not just say it, though?
Grow up.
Like, we have, as athletes, but listen, Kevin Durant's on a whole different level, but you have every opportunity. Like, if Kevin Durant picked up the phone, he could go on First Take, any show he wanted to. He's got social media, anything he wanted to do, and say, hey, listen, here's the deal. Like, just clarify. Like, if you don't like people speculating, just, like, here's the deal. For X, Y, these are the reasons why it hasn't worked out in Brooklyn. I don't want to be here anymore, and I would like to be traded. As opposed to now, everyone's just in limbo. Like, you're one of the biggest names in all of sports, and we're trying to figure out, first of all, why you want to leave. Because it feels like they've done everything and anything that you wanted. And now, like, where are you at? Like, is there a chance you'll come back? If that's not the case, I mean, you just leave it open for everyone to speculate because everyone's interested. I mean, you said this before the show, and I thought it was a great idea when Ray was asking you about the NBA schedule. And I think you're dead on. Like, you don't think the NBA wants to figure out where the hell Kevin Durant's going to end up and how that's going to affect how they schedule, they schedule nationally televised games? Like, if Kevin Durant goes back to Brooklyn and Kyrie's in Brooklyn and Ben Simmons is in Brooklyn, all right. I mean, there's a lot of people for a bunch of different reasons are going to want to watch that. Like, those are games you would schedule for national television. If Kyrie's gone and KD's gone, how many people want to watch Ben Simmons play for, like, what, like, is that like a game that people are dying to? No, they don't care about that. Like, that's like, he's that important.
Well, they're not playing on Christmas right now, and then we'll see where they go from there.
Thanks for listening to the DPHRO and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.